You are listening to Amplify Your Success Podcast, episode 205. Today, we'll discover how to bulletproof your side hustle. So let's get started.
Welcome to the Amplify Your Success Podcast. Hey, are you a thought leader, creative entrepreneur, or change maker and want to magnify your impact, boost influence while creating a financial abundance? Stay tuned for today's inspiring episode with your host, Melanie Benson.
Hey there, inspired entrepreneurs and business leaders. It's your host, Melanie Benson, Profit Amplifier. And oh my gosh, it has been a year, hasn't it? We are almost at the end of 2020. And with that, I know a lot of uncertainty is up for people. There's been uncertainty in almost every industry. And we've had a lot of people really booming during these times. And there's a lot of people that have really been struggling. I wanted to just take a minute to acknowledge it. And I see you. I hear you. I know that everybody's having a very uncertain year. I don't know about you, but I have seen a lot of people really recognizing the value of having their own business this year. I truly believe, and if you've been participating in the Create Your Own Economy giveaway that we did, if you're in my community of amplifiers, you know that having our own business gives us a certain level of control over our financial destiny. Now, I know a lot of people are like, Melanie, I still haven't figured out how to make money with my business. I'd really like to conquer that as my goal. Awesome. Before we jump into today's episode, where we learn how to bulletproof your side hustle and or really ramp up your business during uncertainty, then make sure you get your hands on this free tool that I offer, How to Create a Revenue Rush. Inside, I'm tackling 10 of my proven strategies that take you out of the cash flow roller coaster and put you in to cash on demand. You can get a copy at yourrevenuerush.com. And that also gets you inside my community where you'll start to get notifications about awesome events, new trainings. I've got insights I send you every week on how to really amplify the results in your business. Today, we have got a guest who's talking about how to bulletproof your side hustle. And as I said earlier, this has been a year where a lot of people have started to recognize, maybe I should have my own business, or maybe I'm going to start a second business, or maybe I'm going to add consulting to something else I'm doing. And what I recognize is there's a couple of embedded challenges that come up for people. And one is, how do I find the time? And two is, how do I know if it's really going to work? So let's tune in to my guest today and get answers to some of the biggest questions about getting your side hustle to become a power hustle. You ready? Let's go. Welcome back, friends. Today, we're talking about how to bulletproof your side hustle, especially during uncertain times. And if you have a side hustle, you're creating something that you're emerging right now, you've got to tune in because my guest, Robert Wright, has got some awesome insight for you. So let me introduce Robert. Robert Wright is the founder of the Wright Law Office, a boutique virtual law practice that helps e-commerce sellers across the globe protect and scale their online businesses. Since launching his practice, Robert has advised thousands of e-commerce sellers on how to protect their personal assets, bulletproof their brands, weaponize their works, and safeguard their sales online. To better understand the needs of his client, Robert launched his own physical products business and currently sells them in the United States and throughout Europe. And today, he's going to illuminate us why everyone should have a side hustle, and if you do have a side hustle, what you must do to protect it. So Robert, thanks so much for bringing this conversation to our community.
Oh, I'm really happy to be here, Melanie. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
You are welcome. And it's been really great getting to know you better. And I'm always excited when I hear my guests say, I'm a fan of the show. I've been listening to the show. I'm loving it. So that means you know exactly what our audience and our community is experiencing, and you've got a great taste for the entrepreneurial bug. So, you know, it occurred to me when I was thinking about our conversation today that I know what a side hustle is. You really live and breathe side hustle, but maybe we ought to just like unpack that a little bit and help our audience who's listening in today really understand, what do we mean by a side hustle?
Yeah, you know, I think it is what it says on the tin, right? Like, it's that avenue of revenue that you're trying to generate to bring in a little bit of side money. It's not your primary focus of anything. It's something that you do outside of that you're looking to generate some income, maybe generate a little bit of influence, maybe generate a little bit of recognition, but it's something that's done on the side to amplify you, either from a financial perspective or maybe an influence perspective. I got introduced to the notion of side hustles as I was starting my entrepreneurial journey. I'm a lawyer by trade, and so, you know, launched a law practice, but I'm a big believer in supplementing my revenue with different streams, right? So if, you know, things with the law practice aren't going well, I've got something else to fall back on. And it's, you know, not all of my eggs are in one basket, as it were. And so my side hustle was a bigger side hustle than I had originally anticipated, but it was a physical products business for me. It was, finding products to sell on Amazon, getting them on Amazon.com, ultimately expanding over into Europe, Amazon.co.uk and the like. And, boom, there you have it. I have two sources of income, one being my law practice, one being my physical products business. So that's how I would define a side hustle, but certainly, you know, there are possibly other definitions as well.
No, I think that's perfect. And I always think of side hustle, and I believe that what you're saying is, it is appealing to so many of the people in my community, because most of the people who listen to Amplify Your Success, most of the people that I've coached over the years, they have this insatiable creativity, right? It's like there's this insatiable search for the next thing. Like, they get excited about a lot of ideas. And this idea that you can bring some of them to life by approaching it as a side hustle almost gives them a way to channel that creativity into something that could be a profitable venture, right? Because oftentimes it just becomes a distraction because it's inside one business model.
Right. Right. No, and now I will say this though, Melanie, I think you have to be careful, because entrepreneurs, we love shiny objects, right? We're creative thinkers, and we love, you know, kind of running to the next big thing, I'm guilty of that as well. Right. I think you need to be careful when you're looking at a side hustle to not have too many side hustles, right? I kind of look at my world and kind of my circle of focus of, okay, what's my primary hustle, right? What's my core hustle? And then what's my side hustle, right? And for me, kind of having one at a time going is really what makes the most sense for me, just so that I don't stretch myself too thin, just so I don't get distracted, so that I negate that, you know, I'm going to call it shiny object syndrome a little bit, to make sure that you know, if you're a little bit everywhere, then you're not really anywhere. And so that kind of having a focus on a core hustle and a side hustle for me has been pretty helpful in terms of managing that.
All right. So if I could do a mic drop that wouldn't destroy my mic, I would right now, because that's totally what I think is the problem with people who, for people, I should say, when they're letting that creativity go wild, like they're not really ever going to achieve meaningful results because they're overly distracted. So I'm really glad you brought that up.
Yeah. No, it's you got to wrestle with it. It's the entrepreneurial cross that we bear. But I think once you wrangle it a little bit, I very, very much believe that you can have a core hustle and a nice side hustle kind of going in parallel.
So I know this isn't necessarily our core topic, but it's bringing up a question that I would imagine is surfacing for someone listening in right now. And that is, how do you decide which of the things, of all the things you're interested in, or all the things you could potentially pursue as a side hustle, how do you decide what's going to get your time, your attention, and your investment to move to from idea out into a profitable offer?
Yeah, no, that's a good question, right? And I think the answer is different for everybody. For me, whether it's my primary business or my side hustle, at the center of it there has to be a passion that I have, right? So I'm very passionate about helping people. I'm very passionate about the law. And so, you know, building a law practice and having that as kind of my core focus makes absolute sense there. It's a no-brainer for me, right? But I, you know, for my side hustle, I still want passion, but I want a different type of passion, right? I like the creativity of going out, looking at a physical products market, trying to figure out what people are buying, getting into the numbers about, you know, what's my return on investment, what's my possible margin here, negotiating with the supplier, coming up with a brand name like that. That allows me to tap into a passion of mine that's very different than helping people vis-a-vis a law practice. And so, you know, as I kind of tried to figure out, well, what is, you know, what's my side hustle? I wanted something that I was passionate about. I wanted something that was going to be profitable. But I also wanted to kind of scratch an itch that was different than the one that's scratched with the law practice. So that's, you know, kind of put all that in a bowl, mix it up. And that's how I came up with my side hustle and what I do. But, you know, again, it's different for everybody.
Yeah, I think that's true. But I'm glad you brought up it's the passion has to be there and the profit potential. Because I think if you get out of balance on either side, it's not really a sustainable thing. And we all know that we need to have passion and profit in order to keep getting our boots on the ground every day.
Absolutely. Got to put food on the table one way or the other, for sure.
Right. Now, I think one of the things that comes up, and I know I've been asked this question, and I'm really curious your take on this, side hustles and business entity. So we all know our core business should have a business entity formed for it to protect it. Absolutely. And we've talked about that here. But what about your side hustle? Like, is that fact? Is that fiction? Do we need to have a business entity? Where do you advise people on that?
Yeah, no, it's absolute fact. You know, I mean, if you're out there doing business, whether it's kind of your primary business or a side hustle, you're putting yourself out there, and there are certain risks associated with putting yourself out there. And so I get kind of, you know, the entrepreneurial community is really interesting, right? Because there's very much something to be said for, you know, just get started, move fast and break things, get out there, take action. You know, there's a lot of different, you know, mantras and war cries that we have of just move, because good things are going to come from movement. And I believe that to an extent. But at the same time, if you're doing business, you've got to be serious about your business. You've got to do the things that serious businesses do. And so, you know, operating through a proper business vehicle, whether it's a limited liability company, whether it's a corporation, that seems a little bit overly formal on its face, but it's really not. If you're doing business, you want to be doing business through a proper business vehicle so that your personal assets aren't at risk. It's the same reasons why you would organize a limited liability company or incorporate for your primary business are the exact same reasons why you would want to do that for your side hustle. It's a business. It's just a little bit of a different type of business.
And does that matter if it's a product business versus a services business?
Yeah, I really don't think so. I mean, you know, to me, I don't distinguish between the two. I mean, I think about, you know, kind of the risk profile, right? I had a prospective client email me earlier today, and they have an LLC that's set up for a coaching business that they do. And their question was, okay, they're going to sell physical products. Do they need a new limited liability company, or can they leverage that existing limited liability company? And so as I've explored that with them, my questions were really around, okay, well, what's the nature of your coaching, right? Is it just kind of general educational coaching? Is it, you know, six-figure business consulting coaching? Is it something else? You know, what are the revenues associated with that? And what I'm trying to get at with those questions are literally a risk profile, right? If the risk profiles are largely the same, then it might be in a service-based business. You can just leverage your existing corporate entity for your physical products business, or vice versa. So for example, you know, my physical products business, I have a unique limited liability company set up for that, because the risk profile of the physical products business is very different than the risk profile of a law firm. But within that physical products business, within that limited liability company, I do a little bit of training, a little bit of consulting as part of that. And so, you know, one business entity, two really different types of revenue or streams of income that are being generated, but based upon the risk profile, you know, it just makes sense. So I think, you know, if I were to sum up my thoughts on it, it absolutely makes sense to have a business entity to run your side hustle. Sometimes that might, you might be able to leverage the entity that you already have set up for your primary business. You should move fast and break things, but you should also drive towards simplicity. And if you can leverage something that you've already created in terms of a business entity, it might make sense for you to do that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'm really a big fan of simplify to multiply. Yeah, yeah. I've had complicated, and I'm like, complicated is not working for me. It doesn't generate the lifestyle experience.
No, it doesn't. But we as entrepreneurs, sometimes there's very much, okay, I'm doing coaching. I need an LLC for that. Okay, now I'm going to do some consulting. I need an LLC for that. Okay, now I'm going to sell some products. I need an LLC. And pretty soon you've got like 8 LLCs set up. Number one, you might not be following that whole one primary business and one side hustle business that we talked about at the outset. But secondly, you've got just an administrative mess of trying to manage all that sort of stuff. And you've got to take that into account as you're thinking about laying the structure for whatever your business is. You simple is good. There's nothing wrong with simple.
Yeah, I agree. I want to like dig a little bit deeper into something that I think becomes a landmine and a potential roadblock for a lot of entrepreneurs when they're setting something new up. And this, to me, this could be your primary hustle or your side hustle. But I oftentimes have people asking me like, Melanie, it's a lot of money to get a lawyer involved. Do I really need a lawyer to set up my entity? Do I really need to bring a lawyer in and you know, do the protection side of my business? What is your advice for someone who's maybe starting a new venture, and when should they bring a lawyer into the process?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm a little bit biased because I'm a lawyer. And so
of course,
the proper answer is as soon as possible, right? But I'm not going to give you the proper answer. I'm going to give you the real answer. So I actually think there's something really interesting and something really radical going on in the legal profession right now. And it started with, you know, if you dial it back, 15, 20 years ago, your legal experience was you got in your car, you went downtown, you walked into a big fancy building, you sat on a nice couch, and you waited to be ushered back to this really highfalutin, kind of traditional brick and mortar law firm experience, right? That was, if you needed a lawyer, that's what you got, right? And then, kind of enter, the legal zooms of the world. The folks, entrepreneurial folks that looked around and said, listen, there's a lot of people who don't want that experience. They don't want the money and the fees associated with that experience. They just need a simple business form. They just need a trademark registered. They just need a copyright filed. And so all of a sudden you kind of had on one end of the spectrum, you had kind of the traditional law firm route. And on the other end of the spectrum, you had this do-it-yourself legal platform. And frankly, that's why I launched my virtual law practice, because it's a bridge between the two. A lot of people don't want, the experience of a traditional law firm. They don't want the fees associated with a traditional law firm, but they also don't trust themselves. They don't want to fill out some forms. They don't want to answer some questions. They really do want somebody to hold their hands. And so I think at the as I've been asked that question before by potential clients or in other spaces, I think what's ultimately driving the question is, do I really need to spend that much, right? Aren't lawyers expensive? And I would submit to you, based upon what's going on in the legal profession these days, that the fees associated with kind of the traditional law experience have drastically changed. Lawyers have kind of gotten wise to the fact that they can no longer just kind of make up whatever fee that they want, that they really need to justify their, the price that they're charging for services. And frankly, companies like LegalZoom, Trademarkia, kind of other do-it-yourself sorts of platforms have helped drive that. And I think that's a good thing. So in answer to your question, I would say, number one, don't let fees or, kind of the, what I'm going to call the uncomfortable experience of engaging a lawyer, stop you from engaging one. I would really say, if you're serious about your business, take your business seriously. If you have some sort of business background and you feel comfortable leveraging a platform and, going to the Secretary of State's website and kind of, walking through their educational materials and filing, the paperwork that you need to organize an entity, you can absolutely do that. If you're, looking to protect your brand, the United States Patent and Trademark Office, I think, has a fantastic website, and they give all sorts of educational information to help you file a trademark. I mean, it's frankly outstanding. So if you're willing to roll up your sleeves a little bit, learn a little bit about whatever you're looking to do, all of the materials are available for you to be able to do it and do it successfully. But at the end of the day, I don't think there's a substitute for having someone kind of hold your hand through the process, to answer questions that you have, to make you think about things that, well, maybe you haven't really thought about that just yet. And doing it the right way the first time around, as opposed to doing it on the cheap, getting it mostly right, but then having to course correct later, just from a time perspective and a money perspective, sometimes in the long run, that's not the best option for you.
It's almost like that old saying of you're stepping over dollars to pick up some pennies. That's what I kind of see that visual when somebody's maybe taking a shorter path. And I know a lot of people, like, they're starting something, they're bootstrapping it. And so every dollar is really, really critical. And absolutely, if you're looking at the long game, you have to invest in the things that not just protect you, but actually allow you to grow quickly.
Absolutely. And I'll tell you this, I think any lawyer worth their salt is going to understand if you are kind of bootstrapping an operation and they're going to work with you. Any lawyer worth their salt is going to kind of listen to where you are on your business journey. And if it's not quite the right time to organize an entity, or not quite the right time to register the trademark, or whatever the issue is, right? They're going to tell you that. I firmly believe that. I mean, everybody's got to make money, but as weird as it sounds, like, I'll actually kind of tell clients that they need to chill a little bit, go off, find a product first, then come up with the brand name, and then, come back. You're too early in the process. Come see me when you hit this point. There's legal professionals will do that. They really will.
Yeah, I think that's when you know you're dealing with somebody who's really in it to make sure they're protecting their client, versus like, oh, I need to make some more money. How many people can I bring into my practice this month?
You need to organize 8 LLCs, and I can help you do that. And here's the fee. No. Any true trusted advisor, somebody that's going to give you not only the right answer from a legal perspective, but also, give you guidance from a business perspective. And if you've only got, you're starting your side hustle with $500 in your pocket, and it's going to cost you $500 to organize a company, that's not going to do you a lump of good, right? You're going to have a business up and running, but you're not going to have any money to run it or to buy products or do whatever you're looking to do with it. And so, it's not ideal, but use that $500 to buy the first product, or to create the first course, or to do, whatever it is that you're going to do, get some money in the coffers, and then circle around and, fill in the gaps in terms of paperwork and filings and the like.
Well, I think that's good advice. And I'm wondering, is there anything else someone should consider when looking for and hiring a lawyer that's going to guide them in their business?
That's a good question. I mean, I think obviously fee structures are important, how they bill, how they operate, how they charge. Gone are the days largely of hourly rates. I mean, I know, for years now, as I was headed out of law school, I took a basic law practice management class, and the instructor, a local practitioner, was really hammering home alternative fee structures. And I'm like, why is he, I just thought lawyers billed by the hour, right? And it was just, it's amazing, right? You can just bill for anything. And the reason, come to find out that he was talking about alternative fee structures is because clients don't want that. They don't want to pay, they don't have, just open checkbooks, and, you can, drive down the street and run off to the meeting and go, have lunch and think about legal stuff and bill. Those days are gone, right? So, fixed fee structures are very common amongst firms these days, so that there's some degree of budget certainty. Frankly, I love working on a fixed fee basis because I hate tracking time. It's the most annoying thing in the world. I have to do it. I have to bill hourly on some matters just because it's difficult to really, guesstimate how much effort it's going to take based upon the situation. But things like a business formation or a trademark registration or a copyright registration absolutely are going to be done on a fixed fee basis to create budget certainty for the client. So fee structure is hugely important. Personalities, I think, are important. The reason you're hiring a lawyer is not only for you know, how much they charge and the type of work that they do, but how do you connect with them? You know, I mean, what I didn't realize in law school is that a good bit of my practice, obviously it's preparing documents, it's negotiating contracts, it's doing all those typical legal sorts of things, but there's a real big human component in it. You know, I almost feel like I'm like a therapist sometimes, right? A business therapist or a legal therapist. And I'm gladly, you know, willing to do that, right? But it's because and the folks that I work with, they become meaningful to me. I mean, they're not just my clients. They're my friends. They're, you know, in some instances, my family, or what it feels like to be my family. And so I think, you know, finding somebody, I think the best lawyer client relationship is something like that. And so just trying to connect and make sure that you have a connection with whoever you're hiring, really, really important. And just a third kind of last point, really zero in on the practice areas that the lawyer does, right? You know, there's nothing wrong with kind of a general practitioner that does a little bit of everything. Those folks certainly have their utility and their usefulness, and they're great. They might be perfect for a specific situation. But if you have a really nuanced intellectual property matter, you know, you're concerned about someone copying your course, and you know, they've got it hosted on a server farm somewhere overseas, you're probably not going to want a general practitioner. You're probably going to want to work with someone that's really, really focused in terms of their practice on intellectual property matters, or maybe even specifically copyright enforcement matters. So really, you know, think about what your business is, what issues you typically deal with, and then asking whoever you're interviewing in terms of working with, is that what you do? You know, because I see that you also do some, you know, personal injury or bankruptcy. How much time do you spend doing those things? Because I don't really need someone whose primary focus is that. I need someone whose primary focus is, you know, whatever kind of your area of need is. And really, you know, kind of honing in on a specialist, as it were.
I think that's really solid. And to think about it, if you're going to your general practitioner and you realize you have a heart issue, you're not going to ask the general practitioner to do your heart surgery. You know,
exactly.
You're going to go to the specialist.
Get a specialist. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't want there to be a general idea of what to do. You want a really clear plan of action and someone who's used to getting the best results in that particular situation. So solid advice. And while we're on the subject, I'm imagining that if somebody's recognizing, oh, I don't have a lawyer, I don't have this protected, they at this point are going to be thinking, well, how do I get more information on Robert? How would you like to guide people to take a next step with you?
Yeah, absolutely. So you can connect with me on counselinthecloud.com. That's counsel in thecloud.com. I have a business protection blueprint there that you can download and check out. It's going to give you the four steps that you should be taking to protect your side hustle, your primary hustle, you know, whatever your business is, you know, those four steps are going to be applicable to you. You can also book a call. So I have a link there where you can go ahead and book a call, a consultation. There's no cost associated with it if you have an immediate sort of need. So happy to speak with folks if there's interest.
Perfect. All right. So counselinthecloud.com. I will link that up in the show notes. Cool. If for some reason you're having a hard time getting that written down or what you wrote down didn't work, I will make sure it's linked up properly so you can get that great resource and you know, book a time with Robert to see if he's the right lawyer for you. Robert, I know you listen to the show, so you probably know what's coming next. I always like to ask my guests and kind of go a little bit deeper into the personal side of your own growth and your evolution.
Yeah.
What was the boldest thing you've had to do to get to where you are in your business today?
Boldest thing that I've done. You know, to me, it was really taking that first step of relying upon myself. Right? Like there's very much a temptation of, you know, leaving law school and going kind of the status quo of going the traditional firm route or going to the comfortable business, you know, and getting a nice salary and kind of going down that path. The decision to bet on myself, I it's a, for me, it was a very bold choice because it's not something that I had really seen done before. You know, my family, you know, my parents both worked for nice large companies. They both kind of went their traditional employer-employee route. And so entrepreneurship was not something that ran in my family. And so saying yes to entrepreneurship, deciding to bet on myself, for better or worse, that's the boldest thing I've had to do. And it's paid off, which has been great. But it was certainly a scary at the time, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can imagine. You know, having come out of a corporate environment and having to make that decision myself, I remember everyone asking me if I was really sure, really, really, really sure that I wanted to strike out on my own. And I know for me, there was like a particular like factor involved in that decision mm-hmm. that made entrepreneurism really make sense for me. I'm just curious if there was a factor or something involved that was just like, yes, I have to do this versus staying with a more of a corporate, you know, big company route.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was just kind of just seeing the journeys of my parents for sure. And just kind of, you know, they had nice careers, but you know, they hit ceilings in terms of what they were doing. And so then they mm-hmm. just kind of continued to do what they were doing for the next 10, 15, 20 years. It was kind of every day was Groundhog's Day of kind of doing the same thing. Looking around at friends that were in a corporate environment, and just, you know, kind of the politics and the, you know, the management layers and the bureaucracy, it just, I just realized I don't want that. And I think, admittedly, I was naive, kind of my early days of my entrepreneurial journey of, you know, hey, I'm going to go launch a website, and I'll bet on myself, and, you know, champagne will fall from the heavens and velvet ropes will part, and you can just, you know, it's fun all day. And I quickly learned that's not the case. Like, owning your own business and betting on yourself takes a lot of hard work. But, you know, the freedom it's freedom that I was looking for, and it's freedom that I found, and just, you know, recognizing that and continuing to remind myself of, you know, true wealth for me includes that freedom. That's a huge component of it. It's what, you know, makes every day worthwhile for me.
Well said. Thank you. Thank you so much for bringing this really powerful conversation to our community about recognizing the power of a side hustle, when we should have a side hustle, why we should have one, and how we protect it. And I really want to encourage you to grab Robert's resource and know he's here for you as a support system, as your legal counsel, if you need someone. So we'll make sure that's all linked up in the show notes for you. Robert, thanks so much for being here today.
Well, thank you, Melanie. It's been fun.
This is Melanie Benson, your host. Thanks so much for listening in today. If you want to catch up on any of the show notes and circle back on any of the resources we shared in today's show, head on over to the show page at amplifyyoursuccesspodcast.com. And remember, you amplify your results faster when you're in a community of other people who are moving and shaking. Join us at amplifyyoursuccesscommunity.com. One last thing. When you've gained insight from today's episode, help us share that and inspire other people by heading over to iTunes, subscribing, and give it a review. iTunes absolutely loves seeing these reviews pop up, and it actually helps boost my show's visibility. So I would be super grateful for your reviews. And as always, I love seeing your shares of these episodes on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Come find me over there. Tag me in your shares. I'll give you some social media love right back. So see you next week for another inspiring episode of Amplify Your Success Podcast.